Welcome to Today on Broadway for Monday, February 13th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, I want to throw this out here because we're not going to really talk about it because it seems like nothing really happened. But on Friday afternoon, people started tweeting that there was a fire at the Lyceum Theater. Saw it from Broadway Radio friends Adam Feldman, who works right next door to the Lyceum. Jen Tepper started talking about it. Apparently, there was a fire on the second floor of the Lyceum that started at like an electrical box, but it seems like it was taken care of very quickly. No damage. So we won't get into, I don't think there's really much more to say than that, but I figured it was something important enough since there was quite a bit of hubbub on Friday that we should at least mention it.
Absolutely. There was an hour or so of concern and then lots of good jokes after it, after we realized that nothing terrible had happened. So that's her.
Especially because the next show that's going into the Lyceum is the play that goes wrong.
Exactly.
And so it kind of makes sense that they would have a little fire before the show officially moved in.
And I was like, you know, what better, you know, guerrilla marketing tactic can you do?
I mean, it's not Cats, which you think is the king of guerrilla marketing, but who knows? It's another show that has its roots in the UK. So maybe it is a guerrilla marketing thing.
All right, let's move on to the news that will be the news that we'll talk about for at least a week or so.
Oh, you think? Well, could be. Yeah, yesterday at the 59th Annual Grammy Awards, the Broadway revival of The Color Purple took home that little phonograph-looking trophy for the Best Musical Theater Album of the Year. Danielle Brooks, Cynthia Erivo, and Jennifer Hudson were all designated as principal soloists, and they are now, I guess, either first time for Erivo and Brooks or two-time Grammy Award winners. Of course, Jennifer Hudson already had one of her own. The Broadway Records cast recording was produced by Stephen Bray, Van Dean, Frank Filippetti, Roy Furman, Scott Sanders, and Jet Tolentino. Stephen Bray, Brenda Russell, and Ali Willis are the show's composers and lyricists. Every theater podcast's friend, Robbie Rizel, is out there because he designed the artwork for the album. He is at the Grammys as we are recording. He is freaking out over Beyonce performing. So I'm sure we'll hear lots of stories from Robbie, but congratulations to everybody involved. I think, James, this was one of those foregone conclusions that everybody in the theatrical community, as good as things like Waitress were and Bright Star were, everyone just kind of assumed that The Color Purple was going to win.
Yeah, I think that they were odds-on favorite, but it's good to see the rest of the Grammy establishment has recognized what we all knew ahead of time. And I have to say that a special part of my heart goes out to Robbie, because I've known Robbie for a really long time, and it's so great to see somebody who is so nice and so talented succeed, and he's a great friend to all of us.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, he's okay. Yeah.
No, I told him on Twitter, I was like, he doesn't get to call himself a Grammy winner because he wasn't one of the producers or artists on the album. But I think we should all still refer to him as Grammy winner Robbie Rizel, whether that's accurate or not.
I'm pretty sure he's already changed his name to that. The paperwork's already through.
Then probably.
All right. Next up, Actors Equity and Lort extends contract negotiations.
Yeah, on Friday, John Pinto, the acting director of the U.S. Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service, issued a statement on behalf of the League of Resident Theaters and the Actors Equity Association regarding the progress in their ongoing labor contract negotiations, which affects all 72 member theaters of Lort in 29 states, including Washington, D.C. In the statement, Pinto said that the two sides would continue negotiating after having a very good week of progress leading up to it. The contract between the two organizations actually expired yesterday. So this is fairly similar, James, to what we saw between Actors Equity and the Off-Broadway Alliance. James, as you know, Lort is a collection of the largest and most well-respected not-for-profit regional theaters around the country. You probably know more about their actual inner workings than I do, having you've worked directly, I would assume, with maybe some of those theaters over the years. What exactly is the main responsibility for Lort, other than just kind of being a labor negotiating organization for those groups?
Well, it's somewhat of a higher standard that they hold themselves to, insofar as the level of productions. And you'll see a lot of Lort theaters are the theaters that we see around the country that are developing new works and are at sometimes at higher educational institutions. I think there's probably a Lort Theater at The Ohio State University, isn't there?
I would be surprised. I don't think so. But maybe I haven't been there for
the URT
13 years. I don't know. But there are a lot. And you're right. These aren't necessarily like the places where national tours go into.
No.
But these are the places that pre-Broadway tryouts come from.
You know, like the La Jolla Playhouse is pretty much sure La Jolla is a Lort Theater.
Is the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, where I saw a lot of shows.
So when you're thinking of the major theaters around the country, think about Lort. I think Roundabout and Lincoln Center are Lort Theaters, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And that's why we have to talk about the fact that they are not necessarily on Broadway contracts. Their budgets are much different, which is why you can see every Bartlett Sher show have like 70,000 ensemble members because they aren't getting paid Broadway scale. They're being paid on a Lort contract.
We talked about that in The King and I, having the cast being paid a lower salary, at least in the beginning. If I think sometimes when they extend, or definitely when they change when they change theaters, they renegotiate something higher. So
yeah, I believe it's after. Sorry, go ahead, Sam.
No. What were you going to say?
After their initial run, anytime it's extended, they convert over to a Broadway contract.
So, excuse me. That's that's why these Lort negotiations are really important. You'll see. Sometimes commercial producers get very upset, especially around Tony Award times when, they've spent multi-million dollars on a production, and other Lort productions from Lincoln Center and from Roundabout Theater and Manhattan Theater Company, MTC, they are also spending multi-million, but less than the commercial printers, commercial producers would be spending on their projects, and they want to be held to a different category of competition there, because when The King and I, when you have 50 children and on stage and Kelly O'Hara is singing a song to 50 children, everybody in the audience is going, "Aw," All right, so what's up in the show and casting news?
Well, first off, after a couple of adjustments over the last few years, on Friday, the Madison Square Garden Company announced that their New York Sometimes in the Spring spectacular would be taking another one-year hiatus. It was launched to be the springtime tentpole equivalent of the Rockettes' Christmas spectacular, but despite the presence of Laura Benanti and Derek Hough in the first year and some lesser stars in the second, it just hasn't caught on yet. In a statement, MSG seemingly acknowledged that. They said, quote, "While we were successful on a number of fronts, we believe there is additional work needed on the production, which cannot be completed before the start of this year's show. Rather than showcase a product that is not yet at its best, we have made the decision to take a one-year hiatus and instead pursue opportunities to broaden the Rockettes brand through significant appearances across the country and internationally, including a USO tour and the 2017 Tony Awards. We remain committed to the production and look forward to the show's return in 2018. So, James, A, I guess the Rockettes will be performing at the Tonys, and B, last week was not a good week for your old friend James Dolan.
Well, Jimmy Dolan is bringing fighting back to Madison Square Garden, and perhaps
not boxing or UFC though. No,
so hey, maybe
free Oakley, Charles Oakley.
So if we bring Oakley and Dolan to Radio City, I think they'll sell more tickets than the Spring Spectacular would.
Can you imagine? How about this? Charles Oakley and the Rockettes doing a kick line. I'm there for that, James. I think every Knicks fan would show up and buy a ticket to see that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what's Patrick Ewing up to these days?
He is an assistant coach somewhere in the NBA. I'm not sure where.
Oh, well. I have to do the Venn diagram between National Basketball League, NBA, and
Association.
Excuse me. Yeah. All right. So next up, Becky Ann Baker and David Constable join Bobby Cannavale and the Hairy Ape at Park Avenue Armory.
Yeah, last week we learned that stage and screen vets Becky Ann Baker and David Costable would be joining the previously announced Bobby Cannavale. Those are Costable and Cannavale. Those are great Dago names there. in the Park Avenue Armory's revival of Eugene O'Neill's The Hairy Ape, directed by Olivier Winner Richard Jones, performances begin March 25th and run through April 22nd. On a real quick tangent, I had a little bit of a conversation about David Costable on Friday when I interviewed the one, the only, I haven't told you this yet, James, listen to this, wait for this. I talked to Kudish for about 45 minutes on Friday, and he is on the
that's
TV
short
show.
For Kudish.
Yeah, Kudish. That's yes. Oh, trust me, it was.
He could go on for hours and hours and hours.
And as I told his publicist, I could let him go on for hours because he is amazing. Yeah. But Kudish is on the TV show, the second season of the TV show Billions on Showtime, which also co-stars David Costable along with Damian Lewis and Paul Giamatti and Malin Ackerman. And so we talked about the fact that that show has a ton of theater people. Condola Rashad is also on it. Kelly Acoin is on it. So this show is really over the top and really crazy. But I've seen the first two, I've seen screeners for the first two episodes of this season. Kudish shows up in episode two, and his character is so good. He is so bizarre and so over the top. It's perfect Kudish. So if you are a Mark Kudish fan, which if you're not, I want you to unsubscribe because I don't want you listening to this anymore because you don't deserve it. definitely check out Billions on Showtime and my interview with him. We'll have an article up on BroadwayWorld.com later this week. So anyway, there's my David Costable tangential story.
Did you record it?
I did, but there was a little bit of audio issue. My headphones died, and so there's a little bit of feedback. So if I can get the audio to work, I will. We'll put it together as a podcast maybe on Saturday. But, actually, on Thursday, the day before I talked to Kudish, I also talked to Russell Hornsby. He plays Lyons in the film adaptation of Fences. He also played the role on Broadway. He's done a bunch of August Wilson stuff off Broadway as well. He's also one of the cast members from the very beginning of the show on NBC's Grimm, which is wrapping up its sixth and final season. Currently, he was another great guy to talk about. He's so passionate about August Wilson. So if I can get that audio put together, I will do that. Hopefully, if I can get Kudish's sound to come out properly.
All right. So Heidi Blickenstaff and Emma Hunton to stick with Freaky Friday in Cleveland.
Yeah, things will continue to be freaky for the great and wonderful Heidi Blickenstaff and Emma Hunton as After stays in Washington, D.C. and the aforementioned La Jolla Playhouse in California. The pair will continue to lead Disney's Freaky Friday musical at the Cleveland Playhouse from April 15th through May 20th. The show will then move to Houston's Alley Theater, but there is not yet confirmation that the show's stars, Blickenstaff and Hunton, will return for that production. James, this is interesting to me because it's been a while since we've seen a whole host of pre-Broadway tours. The most recent that comes to mind is Bring It On, the musical, which actually started at Lort Theater, the Alliance Theater in Atlanta, where I saw it. But with Escape to Margaritaville and The Secret Garden and now Freaky Friday, even though there's been much less public discussion of a Broadway transfer for Freaky Friday than Margaritaville and Secret Garden, but it seems like producers are starting to consider this move a lot more now than they have in recent years. What do you think's behind that? Is it just coincidence, or is there some sort of financial or development or artistic reason for that?
I think because they don't have a theater to bring into New York, and they're getting it up on its feet and trying to work at everything with the ability to pounce immediately should something change and open up. If some other plans fall apart, if something closes unexpectedly, they're ready to go.
So it's keep it ready, keep it running, get the most work out of it so that if a theater does open up, they don't have to worry about trying to get it ready in a couple months. It can be as ready as it possibly can without having a New York theater ready.
Yeah, and especially with Margaritaville has such a strong Jimmy Buffett tie, and Secret Garden mm-hmm. is well known, and Bring It On's got a movie, and Freaky Friday's got a movie. So I guess they don't really need to build any buzz about it because they've already these are kind of well-known properties that can come in on their own merits.
Yeah. But other than The Secret Garden, all those other shows that you mentioned are new shows. So it kind of works almost like an off-Broadway run, or, you know, there's nothing, you know, we've seen, like, Dear Evan Hansen had an off-Broadway run and an out-of-town run. So this is kind of like taking the place of that. Rather than going into second stage or something like that, they're just going to go ahead and do as many out-of-town as they can, try to spread the word, and get as much work done before it actually comes into New York, if it ever does.
One of the other revenue lines for a Lort Theater when they develop a product such as, you know, I'm trying to think of a good the Who's Tommy, I think, was Lort developed at La Jolla.
La Jolla.
And as that goes on, they will get a percentage of the revenue from that. It's not a huge percentage, but it is a percentage, and maybe these other musicals don't want to give up these percentages, so they're doing commercial runs in a pre-Broadway tour. Well, supposing. I have no
spitballing
about that.
Hey, man, I like it. I love it. That's good.
All right, what's up in this week's theatrical schedule?
Holy crap, James.
Yeah.
It's starting. It's beginning.
Yeah.
It's beginning. There are so many things happening, opening or beginning previews, that I'm just going to run through them. I can't go into detail because there's just too many. But I'll just run through them. If you have questions, you know how to use Google. Beginning previews on Broadway on Tuesday, Valentine's Day, is Significant Other. Also beginning previews off Broadway is that immersive pie shop Sweeney Todd, as well as The Skin of Our Teeth at Theater for a New Audience. All the Fine Boys at the New Group. Joan of Arc Into the Fire, not related to Scarlet Pimpernel, at the Public Theater. And The Light Years at Playwrights Horizons. That's all Tuesday. Opening on Wednesday, the 15th, is Man from Nebraska at Second Stage. And beginning previews is The View from Upstairs off Broadway, James, which we'll talk about again here in a few minutes. Opening up on Thursday night is The Evening at the Top House, which is written by Wallace Shawn and co-stars Wallace Shawn and Matthew Broderick from The New Group. Then on Saturday, previews begin for Come From Away on Broadway. And then on Sunday night is the one night only 25th anniversary concert of Crazy for You. So there's a whole lot going on. A lot of these shows we've talked about, some we haven't. Check them out if those are things that you are interested in.
All right. Yeah. And that's all starting to happen. And we will be very tired. So next up, we'll talk a little bit about what's coming up for us on Broadway Radio, and also tell you what happened this weekend on Broadway Radio. So were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
I was just going to intro you, but if you want to intro yourself and talk about this week on Broadway, feel free.
Well, this week on Broadway, we talked to Michael Ungaria, who we just talked about The View Upstairs. He's just starting that up, and they go into previews. They go into previews this week, and they open up in a couple of weeks from now. It's a story of a gay bar in New Orleans, and what kind of a major event
from
that
the
happened
70s,
there.
Yeah.
I do not want to spoil the story there. So take a listen to This Week on Broadway. We interview him. We also talk about Big River. Peter and Michael give differing views on Big River. We talk about New York Theater Workshop's The Object Lesson and why you should not go see that. And there's a few other things that happened there. So take a listen to This Week on Broadway. We had a really good time talking about those things. All right, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, real quick before we do that, James, I do want to let everybody know that on tomorrow's episode, you did a special interview with the one, the only Nika Graf Lanzaroni, of course, from the Ensembles podcast, from Chicago, on Broadway, Women on the Verge of Nervous Breakdown on Broadway, most recently of Sweet Charity off Broadway with Sutton Foster at the New Group. She's got a new 54 Below show coming up called Hero Worship, which we talked about a little bit in passing last week. You talked to her for a few minutes, and that interview is going to be on tomorrow's show, so check that out. In the meantime, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for starting your week off with us, and we'll be back and talk with you tomorrow.
Patrick Ewing is now an assistant coach on the Charlotte Hornets.